Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about David Anspaugh's 1986 film, Hoosiers. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Ben, I'm in this cage you call a recording studio podcasting with a bunch of gorillas.
Again, your references are lost on me.
Ben, that reference is from Hoosiers, the movie we watched, 24 hours ago.
Okay, well,
you'll have to be up on your game.
You'll have to bring up which part that was, because
maybe I should coach you on remembering what's in the movies. You really dropped the ball there, Ben?
Yeah, I was. Damn it, you beat me to it. I was literally caring to say that. Okay, joining us today also is a good friend of ours, a friend of the show. His name is Joe Leninger. He's been on this podcast many a time. He writes for the playingfieldblog.blogspot.com. Joe.
It's a .com now, dude.
Oh, yeah, just the playingfieldblog.com.
Oh, excuse me. All right, forgive the misspeech. How's it going, Joe?
Good, man. It's a pleasurable enjoyance to be here.
Awesome. Yes, I'm glad that we have you here for a sports-themed movie, since you can provide, in theory, some sort of
sports in this movie?
Insight.
So close to you, I can smell your bubblegum flavor, Ben.
Oh, yes, yeah. That line I do remember, so sorry.
Bazooka Ben.
I also checked out Coach Carter. Is that going to help us analyze the movie?
What is that?
I also watched Air Bud, just to throw my hat down there.
Oh, man. This is going off the rails quickly.
Do you want a man?
All right. Well, if you guys are just joining us for the first time, I apologize in advance. We start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what you've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Joe, I believe you have the character name game for this week.
Yeah, Ben, I researched long and hard about this one, and it's a movie that came out this past Friday, and the character's name is going to be Collins Toohey.
Collins Toohey, okay. So we have to guess which movie that character is from. All right.
One degree of separation on this one.
Yes. Okay, cool.
Because of the new ground rules.
Yes, I would like to keep that.
Those aren't new.
I would like to keep those ground rules if we can. Tyler seems to roll however he chooses when it's his turn, but we'll see how it goes. What's that? Okay, all right, well, let's go into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, books, comics, whatever, any sort of pop culture related stuff. Tyler, what have you been consuming this week?
Well, you got a new television season on your hands, a la autumn 2011 or 2011, whatever you want to call it. So I got a couple shows that premiered this season. I don't want, you know, obviously there's the usual shows that I watch, but I think Joe's got a couple too. Couple of new shows I wanted to talk about briefly. See
okay.
If our listeners want to, start fresh with a couple of series, especially if you, saddened by the cancellation of maybe a previous show that didn't make it as many episodes last season.
Lone Star.
Yes. R.I.P. Lone Star.
Terriers.
Yes.
Is another one that comes to mind.
Chicago Code.
But anyway.
Go ahead. Chicago twist that knife. I forgot about that one.
Wait, did you like
Undercovers.
Lone Star, Ben?
I did like Lone Star, yeah.
Didn't that only make like two episodes?
Two episodes total, yep.
Wow, that is...
Imagine how fast you could watch that on Netflix Instant.
Yeah. Like, that's not even a movie. I mean, how can anything get resolved in two episodes?
Because
maybe that's why it was canceled, Ben.
It's the series premiere and the series finale. Back-to-back.
Somebody killed my partner next time. This guy killed my partner. All right, so my first show on the docket is Free Agent, starring, I think her name's Catherine Hahn.
Okay.
Catherine Hahn.
And Hank Azaria from The Simpsons fame. And,
yeah.
Simpsons hottie.
Yeah, Simpsons hottie. He plays Chief Wiggum. I think I've seen the first two episodes. This show's on NBC, I believe.
Okay.
And, you know, not hilariously funny, but quaint, I'll say. It's about Hank Azaria's character works in, like, a, I think an ad agency of some kind. I think they might be insurers. I don't really know. But it's an office environment, so there's all these cast of characters. There's, like, the douchebag frat guy, and then there's, like, the ice-cold, you know, mean hot lady. Mm. And then there's Catherine Hahn and Hank Azaria, and they hook up from the very beginning, and so I don't know where they're going with this. Are they going to stay hooked up, or are they going to, like, you know, beat around the bush and just keep having random encounters? But, it's, you know, it's pretty funny. I mean, it's enjoyably funny. It's not terrible.
So it's The Office?
No, it's not. It's not like The Office. It's not that kind of humor. It's kind of like sitcom-y, but without the live audience.
Okay.
So it's kind of, you know, check it out, see what you think, bring it back to the bring it back to home base.
I'm not gonna check that one out.
All right, thanks, Jeff. The next one I got on here is Revenge. Anyone hear about Revenge on ABC?
I watched that actually.
All right. Are you gonna bring that up in your media consume, or can I go ahead and?
No, yeah, go for it. We'll talk about it now.
Yeah, that's the one that changes the G into the 8, right? In the graphic.
It's an infinity
eight?
Symbol.
Revenge 8?
I think it's an 8, Ben. Revenge 8.
The sequel that never needed 7 prequels. Yeah, Revenge, it's a white people problem show. You know, you have a bunch of rich people in the Hamptons, which is where it's set, and they all, you know, basically hate each other but act like they like each other in real life. So, you know, general... you know, human contact, but the main character has some murky past where she's coming to the Hamptons to basically, I'm going to assume, kill everyone so that she can own all of the Hamptons. So, yeah, I just watched the first episode, so I don't know what's really going on. I can kind of put some story together, but I'm sure they're going to switch it up on me eventually.
Yeah.
But I like sexy ladies clawing it out on the beach, so... I'll get a thumbs up for Revenge.
Okay, this show, it might make a little bit more sense to you if you know that it's loosely based on the Count of Monte Cristo from a female perspective. So she's essentially Edmond Dantes, I guess.
Is that an Alexandre Dumas?
It is, yes.
And work? Nice.
Yeah. So she's like coming back to kind of wreak vengeance on these people for presumably like killing her father or setting him up for something or something like that. It's kind of unclear. And that's what I wanted to talk about with the show. Former podcast co-host Pat got a chance to watch this pilot on a plane recently. And then when it aired here, he was like, oh, you should check this out because the show's not too bad. Like, we should watch it. And we started watching it, and it was a totally different version than the one that he saw on the plane. So they changed the edit and, like, wildly changed the structure of the show. They recast the father, Emily Van Camp's father in the show, and just completely, like, moved around a lot of stuff. And he admitted that it wasn't as good in the version that was broadcast to America as the one that he happened to see on this plane. I don't know what he was doing and what kind of cut he saw through that, but apparently the network decided to make some changes to it. So I don't know.
He was probably watching Revenge 8.
Yeah.
Lawnmower Man.
Really that big of a fan of this show. There's not much there that's going to keep me coming back because like you said, Tyler, like, you said you presume she comes back to kill everyone and
take over the Hamptons
and own the Hamptons. It like her goals are never really made that explicit in the show. So you wonder as a TV show, where is this going to go? Like once she gets revenge on all these people, what is it just going to be over? Like what are they going to do to sustain a television program after that? So
there's definitely got to be some drama. I didn't expect them to blow everything in the first episode. I knew there was going to be some secrets. That's why I'm kind of intrigued.
Okay. Well, yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe at like the halfway point of the season, if you're still watching it, you can kind of report back and see, like, let me know if it's good.
It was pretty badass when that lady just put the other dame in exile.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, yeah, she bought the Van Gogh painting. So now she's probably down like $75,000. I don't know how much a Van Gogh is. And then she has to leave her house and leave the Hamptons and everything. So I thought that was pretty.
Oh, Tyler, you clearly weren't watching It's Worth What with Cedric the Entertainer.
Is that a real show?
Yeah.
Is that a spinoff of the Steve Harvey show?
It was on Tuesdays, NBC's leading into America's Got Talent this summer.
Okay.
I'm sure you saw previews of it, Ben. It's Cedric the Entertainer going like, It's Worth What? And like they bring out a bunch of like really unique items that are worth thousands of dollars, and you have to tell him what's worth more, and then you win subsequent prizes.
Wait, wow. It's worth what?
Yeah, exactly. It's worth what? It's like we got a Bengali tiger shipped in from Bengal.
I'm gonna put that at $23.
And then we got
$5,000
of bread eaten by Justin Timberlake. Which one is worth more? And then you got to pick which one, and then you win prizes.
Okay.
Does it drop into a chute if you don't do it fast enough?
No, unfortunately.
And do you have to balance ping pong balls on a straw?
Oh, that's you're thinking of the Guy Fieri show.
A Minute to Win It.
Minute to Win It.
Yes.
And Million Dollar Something Drop.
Okay. Well, Tyler, like have you been consuming anything else relevant recently?
Yes. Oh yeah, definitely. I went and saw Drive this weekend. I think. Ben, you had a review up like 7 months ago, but I just went and saw it today. I'm just kind of a civilian in the movie world. Pretty long, pretty dialogue free, but quite enjoyable.
Yes. Good.
I dug the very beginning. I wish there were more instances of that throughout the film. A lot of it was him just kind of walking around doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I would have done to change the film. But as a whole, I think they accomplished something unique, and I think there should be more movies. Well, actually, I want to say there should be more movies like this, but I don't want to because I kind of want this movie to be its own little thing.
Nice. Yeah, I agree. Well said. Joe, have you seen Drive? Do you have any interest in that? I know you're a Ryan Gosling fan.
I currently don't have the funds to see any movies, Ben.
Okay.
But I will see it in my lifetime.
Okay. Yeah.
That's like
check back in like 3 years.
It's like me and Freaks and Geeks. Like Joe always asks if I've seen it yet, and so does Ben. And then we're just like, sometime in my lifetime, I might check that out.
Tyler, yeah. they show repeats of them on IFC if you get that channel.
I don't have time for that, son.
I don't even know where that channel is. Midnight.
Is that in like the 500s?
It's
different
it's
for every cable provider, Tyler.
Oh, sorry. Again, I'm just a civilian. I don't really know the ins and outs of how.
I have hopes that you'll watch Freaks and Geeks though, because you finally did get around to seeing Party Down. So,
hell yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get the connection, but maybe I will someday in my lifetime.
Yeah,
they're both hipster shows.
Is that it for you, Tyler?
Yeah, that's it. I wanted to make sure that I didn't trample over any of Joe's shows, so I'll stop there.
All right, Joe, let's go to you. What have you been consuming this week?
Checked out a couple new comedies debuting. One on Fox on Tuesday called New Girl with Zooey Deschanel.
Okay.
And this one was pretty good, although it kind of felt like a spin-off of Happy Endings, the ABC show.
Oh yeah.
Interesting. And I'm not just saying that cuz like two of the guys were on Happy Endings.
Okay.
But yeah, Zooey Deschanel, she's pretty funny. I kind of dig that chick.
Okay.
Got her whole, she goes into like her pouty man voice, and it's a barrel of laughs. It got kind of corny sometimes. Some gags, like did any of you guys watch this one?
I didn't see it. No.
Yeah, I checked it out, Joe.
Okay, Tyler. You know, like certain things, like the douche jar. You know that.
Right.
That could be pretty funny. But,
I definitely agree with you when you said it kind of feels like Happy Endings, and Happy Endings is a great show, so I can understand where you're coming from. But Deschanel is not hilarious, but she is, again, kind of cute, funny. I think the guys and the supporting cast is going to help a lot with
the show. She's unintentionally funny.
Yeah, I think she tries to be, like, stupid, which comes off as funny because she's good-looking, I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a weird,
I mean,
it's a weird formula.
It definitely, yeah, it's the pilot, so you gotta watch at least I'd say three or four of those half-hour shows to really get a gauge of what's going on and what directions it's taking. But it looks pretty solid, although, you know, I'm looking at the cast, and one of the three friends is Damon Wayans Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's only listed here for two episodes, but I'm pretty sure he's a main character. So I'm thinking he gets killed off, but it's a comedy? I don't know, Ben, is this possible?
He's one of the guys that you mentioned that's actually on Happy Endings, and I think he's like contractually obligated to that show, and he just did the pilot for New Girl in the hope, or in case Happy Endings didn't get picked up, so he could transition seamlessly. And since Happy Endings did get picked back up, his character's going to have to leave, I think. So
you think they're going to replace him and not mention it?
It's possible. I mean, it's
like
been
random black guy.
It's been done on shows before, but
maybe they will kill him off like Susan from Seinfeld. I mean, that was a comedy, and they killed off a character.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, Ben, the guy you should definitely check this one out. Max Greenfield is also one of the main guys. Tyler, he's the guy who was shirtless half the time.
Right.
He was in Veronica Mars, right?
Yeah, he was Leo in Veronica Mars.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, two thumbs up on this one. One thumb up for NBC's Thursday Whitney.
Mm.
Yeah, that was
not so much on that one.
I mean,
did you guys see that one?
No.
Yeah, I watched that too. It was. I think it might have been you, Ferd, on Warming Glow that said this is basically a show that belongs in the 90s because it really does feel like that. Like
yeah,
Caroline
the
in the City, or like Caroline in the City, or something along those lines. Like Suddenly Susan, or some.
Yeah.
One of those random 90s.
Then when Whitney, like the first scene or something, it came on, it was clearly, you know, the set was really cheap, and then the laugh track started,
mm-hmm.
and the laugh tracks were so loud. It was like you were watching Roseanne or Home Improvement again.
Yeah.
But it's apparently filmed in front of a live studio audience. There shouldn't be a laugh track.
Well, I don't know how they pumped those laughs in, but it's pretty obnoxious.
Yeah, I heard it actually has a laugh track. I'm not sure about that live studio audience claim. I don't know if they're lying straight up or what
the deal is. Maybe that was a joke. Maybe that was like a...
Maybe that is the whole big joke.
Yeah.
It was, okay.
It's supposed to look like a live... Or it's supposed to feel like it's filmed in front of a live studio audience, and they say it is, but it's really not.
Yeah.
You got us good, Whitney Cummings. But, you know, there were some parts that I laughed. But, you know, there were some solid five-minute stretches where... It felt like kind of a recycled humor, you know, like relationship. Oh, that's your mom in the room, or like get off the webcam. I don't know.
Yeah, like the first episode, they're already addressing that we're not having enough sex topic, which is pretty common in sitcoms. It's like I think I preferred them interacting with their friends. I thought that was when it was at its funniest. I didn't really.
Yeah, that's what I hated, because I thought
Whitney's
two friends were just deplorable people. they were drunks, and the redhead was just, she was awful. She was Kathy Griffin's daughter.
Oh no, that's terrible. Yeah, I thought those were the funniest parts. I didn't really. I mean, I guess I'm not used to the chemistry between Whitney and co-star dude, whatever his name is.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
Josh Hartnett.
It might get canceled. Who knows? Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe that whole Thursday block I thought was pretty disappointing.
I could not. Well, I mean, I didn't see Whitney. And what was the other show that night? The Office.
The Office.
Yeah, I will not be watching The Office again anytime.
Wow.
I don't foresee myself ever watching it again.
Because that guy's not funny.
I didn't really find him funny, and I don't really care for the decision that they made to. I don't want to spoil it just in case people haven't gotten around to seeing it yet. But
freaking spoil it, Ben.
No,
yeah, you're not spoiling anything, Ben.
No,
yeah.
I don't want to. Whoever they chose to be Michael Scott's replacement, I don't really see that panning out. In any sort of enjoyable way. I don't know.
It's Michael Scott's twin, spoiler alert.
Oh, man, that would have been ridiculous. Steve Carell leaves the show and then comes back.
I don't know if you got this feeling too, Ben, but I was just watching it, and I felt like I don't need – there's nowhere else for these characters to go that I care about.
Mm-hmm.
and it's just kind of like falling apart.
Yeah, I mean, I had that feeling years ago. Like, it's just not the that's the difference to me between The Office and Parks and Recreation. And I know The Office is obviously going for way longer, but Parks and Rec, it feels to me like all of those characters actually have legitimate personalities and lives that would be interestingly enough explored outside of the office setting, and they do that sometimes in that show. But The Office, I feel like as soon as they leave, like, I would never want to see what Meredith does when she's not at the office, or maybe Creed, just because it would be so crazy. But all the other ones, like, I don't care about any of those characters anymore. I don't know. I think Parks and Rec is just a far superior show all the way around. But, I know, Joe, you weren't really a big fan of the season premiere, but I liked it a lot. And I also liked Community for what that was worth too. So
I liked Community, and I'm going to give Parks and Rec another watch because I think I was dozing off at that point.
Okay. All right.
But I'm like, I don't know. Like, John Ralphio is not around. I don't know. What's his name? Ron Swanson probably had the line of the night when he just bolts and is like, I've got 288 days of personal leave saved up, and I'm using all of them.
Yeah. I've got pounds of ground chuck in my desk. Remove it or it will smell.
Use it wisely.
Go ahead, Tyler.
I kind of agree with Joe. Community, they need to... I don't know who was on the podcast talking about how there's a lot of mean people on Community.
I think it was Matt Patches.
Okay. I kind of agreed with them because, and I really, like, the beginning of Community, I really thought they were going to, like, change everything. Like, everyone was going to be, like, a little nicer, and maybe problems would start happening to them as a group instead of having intergroup problems. But it's kind of becoming more of the same. We're just adding more special guest characters and that.
Well...
I mean, that's novelty for a while, but, you know, Abed is still crazy, and Danny Glover is still rolling off lines that don't make sense. And
Donald Glover.
What did I say?
Danny Glover.
Not the same guy?
No.
So that's kind of my viewpoint on it.
Yeah, well, what you said about you were hoping that problems would kind of face them as a group, that's actually what the theme of this third season is going to be, is that they're going to be... Last season it was kind of intergroup problems, and now they're going to be kind of attacked from the outside. So they're just taking a little while to set that up, I guess. But so let's move on really quick. Man, this media consumed is running long. Let's go into the one thing that I wanted to mention, which is the Playboy Club. It's that show on NBC. Who else saw this? Anybody?
Oh, right here, Ben.
Okay.
Calling me.
Tyler, did you see it? No.
No.
Okay.
I read the magazine instead, I guess.
Nice. So this is a show written and created by Chad Hodge. It stars Eddie Cibrian and Amber Heard and a couple other people. It's another period piece set in, like, 1963 Chicago, and it follows these kind of high class characters and some of the Playboy bunnies, and they're kind of back and forth, and there's, like, a mob subplot, and a character dies in the first episode, and it just kind of, you know, sets the tone for what they're doing in the first season. Joe, what did you think about Playboy Club?
Personally, I thought it was a little slow.
Mm-hmm.
It could have used not taking place in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But other than that, I think I would be kind of content if it had one season to kind of hash out maybe like a chase scenario between the mob and the people in the Playboy Club, and then get canceled.
Yeah.
I want to watch this show, but I don't want to invest more than a season's worth into it. I figured.
Yeah. I didn't really care for it that much. I think, like you said, there's no reason for this to be set in the 1960s except for the fact that Mad Men is set in the 1960s, and it's very clearly, like, trying to bring the success of Mad Men into a broadcast realm, like a main... You know, Mad Men is an AMC show, and not a lot of people watch it at all, even though it's, like, really critically acclaimed. So they're trying to bring that aesthetic into the public eye a little bit more, and I just don't think it's necessary. Like, the whole thing just feels like a cheap kind of spinoff of Mad Men. And the main reason I watch the show, to be honest with you, is I don't care anything about Playboy, whatever, but Eddie Cibrian, who's the guy, like, the male lead, for some reason, I just find him... imminently is not the right word. Excessively watchable. Like he has that kind of almost movie star quality, like some whatever that X factor is that some people have. I feel like Eddie Cibrian has that, and he's just really entertaining for me. I don't know if
that's why Tilt lasted 7 seasons, huh?
Well, that's what I was just getting ready to bring up. He starred on the show on ESPN called Tilt, and it was about poker. And Joe and I used to watch this when we were in college together. And
is that the one with the matador and breaking legs and stairs?
Yeah, and Michael Madsen was in it as well.
Oh,
yeah,
that show was awesome.
It was awesome. Like, I really liked that show, and I don't know. I mean, it's been a good 5 or 6 years or something since it's been on, but I really remember liking it. And Eddie Cibrian was the lead in that show, and I thought he was great. And that was like the first thing I had really seen him in. And I'm excited to watch him again on a regular basis, but I just don't know if I'll be able to keep up with the show. Like you said, Joe, I don't care enough to get invested. You know, there's so many other things to watch. So this show,
Should care. I think it's going to get a little better. Anytime you bring the mob in, it's going to get, it's going to have that element that you're just going to want it's going to draw you into with just the violence factor. I mean, you talk about somebody dying in the pilot. That dude expired in like the 5th minute or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was the pre-title sequence.
Yeah, he got stilettoed to the neck, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Is it just set around the Playboy Club? It doesn't actually involve like Playboy. It just that's the setting, and then there's other stuff going on.
Well, what happened was Hefner had he made the club. It was like one of the first things he branded under the Playboy name because the magazine was successful.
Right.
And it just became like a. Not a gentleman's club, but kind of like a high-class nightclub.
Right.
Or like after-hours bar.
Sure.
And, Hugh Hefner, I think he actually does the voice for the show. I think that's really him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He does, they'll show him kind of like with his back turned, but he'll do the voice, Tyler. So it's that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Ian Fleming used to, a lot of his James Bond short stories popped up in Playboy back in the 50s.
Interesting.
Okay. Nice. Next to the party jokes or what?
Yeah, I guess the magazine was more content and less nudie pictures than it is today.
Okay.
Although I wouldn't know. I don't read that.
Right.
Too much.
Right. All right. Well, yeah, I think that'll about do it for the media consume section. Let's go ahead and move on into our review of Hoosiers.
Hoosiers. They needed a second chance to finish first.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the championship game.
You're not the new coach.
Are you expecting somebody different?
Younger.
Most incredible and improbable confrontation.
Well, those of you who don't know, my name is Norman Dale. I coached college ball for 10 years, but it's been 12 years since I've blown this.
In the illustrious history of the Indiana High School basketball tournament.
That's a hell of a team you had there.
You knew that team?
I know everything there is to know about the greatest game ever invented.
With a pint size hardly big enough for 3 syllables, Hickory Huskers, enrollment 64.
Out of here, right now.
You kicking me out?
Yes, don't come back until you learn to keep your mouth shut and listen.
Take on the defending state champions, the Mighty Bears of South Bend Central.
Run you off the boards. You got to squeeze them back in the paint. Make them chuck it from the cheap seats.
Already calling this the game of the century.
All right, so Hoosiers came out in 1986. This movie was directed by David Anspaugh, and it's arguably one of the most famous sports movies of all time. Let's go around the circle and just do some brief opening thoughts. Joe, you write about sports on a regular basis. What's your take on Hoosiers?
Yeah, pretty decent sports movie. I'm pretty sure. I was pretty sure that I'd seen this as a child, maybe in elementary school, but it was so long ago that I'm now kind of questioning if I ever saw it at all, because I don't remember any of that.
Okay.
Like drunk Dennis Hopper, or, oh man, that blew me away towards the end.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that I had seen it when I was a little kid, but it was way before I knew who Dennis Hopper was. So I'm right there with you. I didn't really remember a thing about this. But what did you think about it? Did you like it?
Yeah, as you may know, I usually try and only stick to movies that were about made 2006 and beyond or had Vin Diesel in them.
Right.
So this felt really dated for me. You know, it's a story you've seen before.
Do you think it felt dated because it was made in 1986 or because it was set in the 50s?
A little bit of both, and the whole story of just overcoming something ridiculous, like having seven players in a school where there's 64 boys in the entire school, and spoiler alert, getting to the state championship.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal in Indiana. That's like Texas football.
Yeah.
Although it was loosely based on the actual Cinderella story in 1954. But
yeah,
it is fictional. The movie itself is fictional.
What did you think about it, Tyler?
Yeah, excellent sports movie. I liked it. I dug the message. I think I too watched this as a kid, but I don't really remember. I'm sure I did because I come from the Midwest, and I think it was filmed entirely in Indiana, so the actual countryside seemed familiar to me because Illinois and Indiana are kind of they basically look the same.
Mm-hmm.
If you're driving through one or the other, so that kind of brought me back. And then it wasn't like nostalgic 50s like you would see in, like, I don't know, Happy Days or American Graffiti or something like that, but. And then, like, the soundtrack, like, it wasn't all, like, 50s music like a lot of people try to do when they do a period piece, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
They'll try to work in, like, you know, some Chuck Berry or some, a little...
doo-wop.
1954 L, yeah, doo-wop or big band. And it was kind of, like, 80s music, synthesized music mixed with, like, 1950s basketball. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Cool. Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. I think this is... I mean, you know, you see all these different cliches. This movie has, like, every cliche in the book. You know, it's got the embattled coach. It's got the tiny player who wins the game with the last shot, who shoots underhanded free throws. It's got the loner all-star who joins the team at a dramatic moment. It's got the whole underdog thing and getting to the state finals and all that stuff that you talked about. So, I mean, this really has all of them mixed into one thing, and it does feel a little dated, Joe, and I think it's just because these cliches have just become so prevalent over the years.
Yeah, are we talking about the Mighty Ducks? Did you watch that instead, Ben?
I know, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, I picked up a lot of similarities between Hoosiers and the Mighty Ducks when I was watching this movie. I mean, it's been years since I've seen the Mighty Ducks, but you just see how well all those cliches work in Hoosiers, and it's no wonder that people, you know, it's no wonder they're cliches, but they're called cliches because they work, because they're used over and over again, and because they're actually effective. And I thought in this movie they all were effective. They did a really great job with it, so... I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, Tyler, do you have anything that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, let's talk about Jimmy for a second. Okay. Towards
Jimmy
the beginning.
Shitwood.
Yeah. The beginning of the film, or the first half of the film, it's basically Jimmy-centered. Like, we're trying to get this player on the team, and, you know, Hackman's character, Norman Daly, whatever his name was.
Norman Dale, sorry.
You know, he's basically saying, all right, everyone's saying you're the best player, and... Like, when they introduce the team, he kind of takes a stand and says, you know, I don't give a shit about Jimmy, even though you guys are cheering for him. Like, this is our team, and we're going to win with this team. So I thought that was really ballsy of the character. But then, like, you think the movie's going to be about Jimmy and Jimmy's backstory and Jimmy's, troubling past. And then he comes and makes the big announcement midway through the movie almost, and then Jimmy's kind of storyline just kind of disappears. Like, he's on the team. And that's why they start winning, and then nothing about Jimmy is addressed for the rest of the film. So I thought that was kind of a loose end, kind of, because, you know, Jimmy doesn't really create a relationship with the coach. He doesn't really – his relationship with the teacher or the lady doesn't really advance. Like, Jimmy's just kind of a, basically a plot point that pushes the story to the point where they can win.
Yeah,
because they're shitty without Jimmy. I mean, they're okay, but they're not winning a lot without Jimmy. And then Jimmy comes on the team, and they start winning.
I didn't get that at all. I thought it was a whole Gene Hackman vehicle, man.
Well, yeah, definitely. But you know what I mean. I mean, this was like you thought it was going to be a Gene Hackman Jimmy story because that was going to be the relationship that made it through all the trouble of the movie. But it was really just more of a like you said, more Hackman than anything.
Yeah, they just needed some kid to, light a fire under their butt, and that's what he did.
Well, that's the thing. They made such a big deal about him, and then when he joins the team, that's it. Like, that's, you know, the movie accomplished its goal halfway through, and then the rest
of it. That's what he does. He plays basketball good. He's not – he could have been a robot as long as he could shoot a – you know, shoot a jumper from the elbow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can shoot a jumper from the elbow. No, but, like, you had this idea that, you know, he wasn't playing because the other coach died or left or whatever. You thought they were going to get into that, but they never did.
I think it was his mom died.
I don't know. Everybody died. I don't know.
Yeah, one of his parents was sick, and then the other
his
was
mom was sick, and his dad
ill.
Died.
Yeah.
And so teacher lady was looking after him because they were neighbors.
Yeah.
The only female in the movie.
They were like 60 miles away from each other, but still considered neighbors in the Midwest.
Yeah, Tyler, I felt the same way. I have written down here in my notes that Jimmy is like the clear superstar, and that totally contradicts the team mentality that Hackman put forth. Like, you know, like you said, he spends the whole first half of the movie talking about, like, he even gives this big speech about how, like, we're a single unit, we're pistons pumping together, and, like, no one player is more important than the other. But it's clearly Jimmy is the superstar. Like, they don't win without him. It's that simple.
Right.
So, and even the final game, like, seems to vindicate that way of thinking, because Hackman sets up that final play and says, okay, we're going to use Jimmy as a decoy. And that's like, that's the thing to do if you're trying to show that the entire team works as a unit, is not have him take the final shot. And he just kind of pouts, and everybody's like, but I thought he was going to do it. And he's like, I do it. And they're like, and he's like, fine, all right, just do it. And of course he makes it. But it's just like that, you know, Hackman did take this big stance.
It was a magical moment, Ben, you got to admit.
I don't know. I didn't find the magic in it that I probably would have as a younger viewer, just because of that exact reason. Like, I just think Jimmy is a plot point instead of a character, because he really does just drop off story-wise as soon as he joins the team.
Right.
He's just like, he's like the Adam Banks of the Mighty Ducks. Like, that, you know, he's the guy who's
defected
just, like,
from Iceland, or defected from the other team.
Yeah.
Wasn't Iceland yet.
Yeah, that was T2, the Mighty Ducks are back. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of vibe I got from that. But
nice.
Joe,
what were some of your problems with the movie?
Oh, the beginning, like, I'd say the first 3 minutes, I thought I was watching a Western. I don't know if you guys picked up on the slow flute playing in the background, and like the montages in the wind where, like, two guys would be talking to be like, oh, it's going to be a good year or something. Like, we got this new guy coming in from the Navy.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of, it started out a little rough. As a sports fan, you know, he was pulling crap, like, at the time, at the beginning when they were playing, let me see if I got this right, Ulitic.
Okay.
In their first game, they had six players and one player fouled out, and Hackman was all like, hey, like, we got another player, but you're staying on the bench. We're only playing with four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
That's a ballsy move, son.
Who's going to learn from this? What? That's not legit at all.
What are you talking about, Joe? That's such a great moment. Like, he, of course somebody learns from that. Hackman proves his point. Like, he's such a man. He's such a great character in this movie. He's like, he's.
I mean, I could see if he thought they were going to lose the game anyway, but, like, that's, he should have been fired, I'm pretty sure. Like, that's coaches. Not in hindsight, but then coaches get fired for just stupid crap like that they pull.
Yeah, all the technicals he was pulling, he should have been fired.
Yeah, I also have written down that Hackman gets teed up more than Rasheed Wallace in my notes, and that might be like a 5-year-old reference.
Was pulling some Will Muschamp rants during that, man.
Yeah.
Muschamp, man, he was off on those guys.
But yeah, man, he has to, as he says in the movie, like, break him down and build him back up. And there's no way. He's a new coach. He's in this kind of environment where everybody hates him and nobody wants to embrace change. And even the kids, especially, like, he has to earn their respect somehow. And that's the only way to do it, is by showing him who's boss and showing him, like, I'm not going to take your crap if you don't do what I'm telling you. There's no way around this. Like, it's my way or the highway. And I thought that was a really awesome scene, the way that he was just like, yeah, F you. No, we're playing with four. Like, my team's on the court. So
yeah, I didn't see the kid. I mean, they didn't show that the kid was acting out of line, though. I thought it was.
Yeah.
Oh no, they did.
Taking shots. He was taking shots before they made the four passes. He was disobeying the coach.
Yeah, that's
so
that's
he left the guys that were listening to him on the court, and he kept the guys that disobeyed and fouled out on the bench.
Yeah.
So you mean the guy?
Yeah, one dude fouled out, and then the other guy who just went down and shot it whenever he wanted. He put him on the bench and just kept him there to teach him a lesson.
Kobe won championships. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that freaking broken finger. Like
Kobe
years.
Was not in high school. This isn't that Kobe wasn't playing high school basketball.
Did Kobe even graduate high school then?
He
came straight out of high school, didn't he?
He did come straight out of high school. I think he did graduate from Lower Marion, PA or something. But...
I wanted to make a point that, and Joe kind of brought it to my attention, and to a point the Mighty Ducks reference did too. You know, we say there's a lot of similarities to the Mighty Ducks, but in those sports movies, there's usually the team, the protagonist team, and then there's the antagonist team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the Mighty Ducks.
That was clearly Cedar Knob in the second game.
No, I think it was I'm pretty sure it was Decatur School. Anyway, no, my point is that
Cedar Knob.
There wasn't
the fight game.
There wasn't a clear like enemy except the team itself. Like it was the team story that we were watching, not team versus team. It was Hackman getting these guys together. It was kind of an interesting way of doing a sports movie because usually you have, you know, one team versus the other and they battle each other at the beginning and then they go through the whole season and then they face each other at the finals.
Yeah.
It's usually goes the regular formula, but this one they it's their story without any of these other teams mixing it up.
Yeah, and sometimes in the middle section of those kind of movies too, you have the scene where like the two teams will meet like off the court or something too.
Yeah.
You know, like at the mall and just brawl there too, and then like parents get involved and yeah, I mean yeah, they kind of bypass that whole storyline. But go ahead, Tyler, I catch you.
And it's really basketball heavy too, and I really like that because if you're gonna have a sports movie, you might as well just dive right into the technicalities of the sport. Watching basketball and playing basketball, you see there are some people that just want to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
All the time, like no matter where they are, they're gonna shoot and just go constant threes no matter what, and then
like Ben.
Ben is guilty of shooting recklessly at times, but he usually makes it, so it's forgivable.
Ben will strap on his Jeff Hornacek jersey and just light it up.
He's got the headband, the armbands,
oh,
possibly some high tops.
We have
anyway.
Played our share of basketball, but anyway.
It was, what was I trying to say? Yeah, and Hackman comes into this town where everyone is basically rooting for them to shoot constantly, just throw it up there like bricks. And
yeah.
Hackman's like, no, that's not how we're going to play. We're going to play by fundamentals. We're going to have, like, dribbling through chairs and things. That's kind of how I learned basketball was these fundamentals and passing and layups because 2 points is better with a layup than risking it from outer,
mm-hmm.
out by the ring or out by the line.
Mm-hmm.
So it was. I did like how they addressed the basketball dynamics as opposed to just trying to tell like a love story or something using sports.
Yeah.
As a background.
Yeah, so I liked how.
I think the stories were. Oh, sorry, Ben.
Oh, and I was just gonna say, like, speaking of the technicalities, Tyler, I liked how the 3-point line didn't exist in this movie, but Jimmy would still like shoot it from outside anyway, like totally
yeah.
unnecessarily. So
yeah, I was researching that because I wanted to see when the 3-point line was put into place and when the shot clock was put into place because it wasn't a shot clock either. These guys could have just passed it around forever.
Yeah,
and the 3-point line, and Joe, you can probably back me up on this. The 3-point line didn't really come about until like the 70s with the ABA.
Yeah, it was...
The shot clock came in, like, the mid-50s. Like, so this was before shot clocks, too.
College shot clock still wasn't around in the 70s, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
wow.
But I know it said what I was reading in the NBA. Some guy did the math. He was like, I looked at all the great games and realized that, you know, this many points can be scored in a game if they speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like one original game where it was like the lowest score ever of like 21-18, an entire basketball game because they just dicked around the whole time.
Yeah,
people got really pissed and no one was going to the game, so they worked in the shot clock to speed it up and have more points scored.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of an interesting game back in the 50s.
Go ahead, Joe. We derailed you there for a sec.
Oh, yeah. What? How did you guys feel about the lengthy basketball montages? Like, because I felt they were just too long to the point where some of the actual substance of the story was being rushed. Like how quickly he whipped the team into shape. And I'm sure we'll talk about this later. Like the quick de-evolution of Dennis Hopper's character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I felt like that stuff was just kind of shimmied in there for kind of really easy B-roll of basketball and cheerleaders.
Yeah, there was a lot of it, and some of it I thought was a little bit excessive, especially with the slow motion. It's like that's the stuff that where it was causing a problem, where it was dragging out a little bit too long. Because, you know, Hackman's such a great character. I would have liked to see a little bit more of him kind of battling the town and stuff, you know, like getting into it a little bit more with the townspeople. You have a lot of these great scenes where, like,
yeah, like
when he
yeah,
first
the
comes
community,
in.
Like the voting scene in the middle was great,
mm-hmm.
where they just, you know, that old lady chimed up and was like, "We vote again."
Yeah.
After Chitwood says, you know, "I'm playing, but if a coach is leaving, I'm leaving."
Yeah.
That stuff was pretty.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, and the townspeople are so like. Such douchebags to Hackman's character. Like the guy in the very beginning, I think my favorite line in the whole movie was when he was like, he tells him like your coaching days are over or something. And he's like, there's two kinds of dumb, a guy who gets naked, runs out in the snow and barks at the moon. And the guy who does the same thing in my living room. So I just really like that.
He's a big windbag.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird because if you go to like kid games, like I would watch my sister and my brother play sports, and like these parents are atrociously out of line whenever they go to these games, and they're like yelling at the coach, and then they go and talk to him after. It's like he's the coach and they're on the team. Like you shouldn't have anything to do with what's going on in the game. And, you know, I can. And these people were at least not getting violent. I've seen it get violent before at like a YMCA game where parents like fight each other.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, you know, uncivilized.
That kind of happened just locally in our high school football area here in Jacksonville. That happened on Friday night, actually, with the Middleburg High School.
Wow.
Hell yeah. I represent.
What went down?
You guys are just a big like student player and coach brawl with Leon County in Tallahassee.
Wow.
Like players and coaches sent to the hospital and all sorts of carnage.
Jeez.
Dude, definitely face mask everybody you can.
Gouge their eyes out.
Where the head goes, the body follows.
Lead with your head.
Let's talk about Dennis Hopper's character, because that's where I found most of the charming points in the movie was Hackman's relationship with this drunkard that everyone kind of turned their nose up at.
Yeah, do it, Joe. What do you think about Hopper in this movie?
Like I said, he just didn't have enough airtime, and he, you know, it was kind of cool when he had that moment where, through circumstances that I won't spoil, he had to finish the game
mm-hmm.
as the head coach, and then like. I'd say 3 minutes later, he just came out, like, barging onto the court in that next game, was like, "You're out of line, guy! Like, ref, you can't do that!" And they just had to escort him out and fire him.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, oh, that's it? That's what we're gonna do?
Yeah. It was a strange turn of events, especially since you thought he was being redeemed at points. And then all of a sudden, he's just back to the beginning.
I'm good for build him up and tear him down all day, but it just happens so quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of that's like a realistic look at it, though. Like sometimes, I mean, people who have alcoholism as a, I mean, it's a disease. Like you can't control that kind of stuff. And regardless,
I'm not looking
of,
for realism, Ben. I want to escape from our problems.
I want to see magic.
Yeah.
Okay.
24-hour turnaround.
If in a world where you willingly put four players on the court and say things like newfangled, then I want better storylines, Ben.
Well, I thought it was a good story point. Like it was, it's disheartening as a viewer to see that because of course you're pulling for Hopper to kind of come back from this. I mean, he lives in that god awful house with holes in the roof and everything. You see the conditions that he's living in and the kind of strength.
I think that was the median in the 50s.
You see,
I think he was doing okay.
That was actually the Hamptons, Ben.
Revenge.
He was in Revenge 1, not Revenge 8. But
Okay.
Nice. You see how you know, it's the strain he's putting on his son, and like obviously we're kind of pulling for him to come back from that, and then he does, and then there's still movie left, so you can't have that resolution so early in the film. You have to have him break down, so then the ultimate resolution can come, where and it might just been an excuse to give the filmmaker somebody to cut to outside of the final game when they're filming and have Hopper listening to it on the radio and, you know, cheering, can't be there and stuff like that. You always have to have that in a sports movie, you know, somebody who's not there going crazy when they win or whatever. So
that was, that was a callback to, I believe it was called The Pride of the Yankees.
Okay.
Nice. I think there's a little boy, like, you know, waiting for Babe Ruth to hit a homer.
Okay.
In the hospital bed.
Kid in the hospital, yeah.
Nice.
And I think they did it in the one where Dan what was Roseanne's husband's name? Dan Goodman?
John Goodman.
John Goodman. He was playing Babe Ruth. I think they had that storyline in there too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember that. It was like a mini series or something.
Except instead of a kid, it's a grown alcoholic.
Okay.
It might have been King Ralph, Joe.
Oh, God. Has anybody seen Warrior, the MMA movie? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No, but me and Tyler watched Legendary, and there's similar plot points to this as well.
Okay, all right. Well,
episode,
I don't
know what episode number that is, but Legendary and Knucklehead. Episode.
I was just going to bring up the fact that Nick Nolte has kind of a really similar character to Dennis Hopper's here, you know, the kind of drunken father figure who has, like, the, you know, redemption possibilities and stuff like that. So I think both of you guys would actually really enjoy Warrior. That's one of my favorite movies of the year, like probably top 10 or something. So
And in Legendary, Danny Glover this time, he actually plays like the kind of weird outcast that helps the team along and, you know, it puts his stamp on the movie.
Yeah. I thought Hopper had so much personality here. Like, it's like, yeah, of course I know. I know everything there is to know about the greatest game ever invented. Like, he's just, he's kind of a lovable guy in this movie. So,
and it really helps Hackman's character, because he not only is, like, you know, he comes off as like a dick, like everyone thinks he's kind of a jerk, but he's really not. Like, he's trying to help this team. He just wants to play basketball. But then he goes outside, goes to this domicile out in the middle of the woods, and like, basically says, all right, you know, we'll bring you onto the team as an assistant, but you gotta wear a tie. You know, he's basically trying to help this guy in his own way, and you know, tough love, stuff like that, dipping his head in the water, getting him back on his feet is just, it was kind of some of the better parts of the film, because, you know, people helping people, that's what this world's about, man.
Yeah. Yep. Word. What did you guys think about all the speeches, you know, the kind of the standard sports movie speeches? Did you think those were effective in this case, or did you like kind of see through them for what they were?
Hell yeah. I dig a uplifting speech anytime, regardless of what I'm doing.
The at the end of the day, in my book, we're going to be winners speech from Hackman. I think that's kind of a classic one that gets quoted all the time. And
I say that when I'm driving to work.
I don't really remember too many of the speeches in this movie, so I want to say they couldn't have been that impactful on me.
Okay, all right. That's
but
fair.
I was more focused on just the kind of, I don't know, kind of more of the oddities of the movie, like the whole, like just that whole brawl in that one game where, like, just things got way out of control. There's a fist that comes out of nowhere, and then the next thing, some kid's getting pushed through a trophy case.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, whoa, hold up. This is none of this roughhousing here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it was like the freaking Eagles-Giants game.
And it was because, like, Norman Dale, like, got up in the coach's face, too. He's like, you got your gorillas in here. Is that what you were referencing, Tyler, with the beginning? Okay. It took
Who are you calling a gorilla?
We're in this cage you call a gym, playing a bunch of gorillas.
Okay.
And the student's like, you call me a gorilla? He's like, yeah, I'm talking to you. And then all of a sudden, one of Hackman's players just punches him right in the mouth.
Also, then, I was kind of waiting
both,
for that.
Both
ejected. I was kind of waiting for that storyline to develop about how Hackman's past transgressions kind of surfaced in the town.
Mm-hmm.
to see if he was going to emulate some of those old fiery personality traits, but it kind of never went anywhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. Like, what is her name? Myra? What is the
1980s
name?
Parker Posey?
Barbara Hershey's character finds out that, like, the true kind of past of Norman Dale. I was expecting the same thing, Joe. I was expecting, like, either if she didn't reveal it, then somebody else to kind of reveal it at, like, one of those town meetings or something, and everybody just to just be like, oh, boo, hiss, ha, whatever, and then have him have to kind of fight that off. But that's what we were talking about earlier. The movie spends so much time doing these slow-mo montages that it doesn't really have a lot of time to develop more of Hackman versus the townspeople type of stuff. So I think that might be something that they may have covered if they did everything in real time instead of Zack Snyder speed ramping mode. But
no, this movie's all about redemptions. It's not about, you know, Hackman's character is supposed to be like a reformed individual that comes to help people in this town. Like, if we had him going back to, you know, his original vices,
well,
we'd have the movie kind of fall apart.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean to imply that he would like punch another student in the face.
He would punch the lady at the podium in the church before she read it.
No, but just that the other people would find out about his past, and then you know, keeping with the redemption theme, he would have to like prove himself to them even on that level too. But
I don't know. I thought there was room for him to get physical. Like, you know, when one of those kids was out of line, he could just, you know, like shoved him down, or did the Bobby Knight like chair toss or something.
Yeah,
the old Board of Education, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, or maybe roughhouse that one kid, Hopper's son, who looked like he was 35.
What did you guys think about the actual basketball? Like, I think we talked a little bit about this before, but like watching the games and stuff. Tyler, you said you enjoyed it because there was a lot of it, but I mean, like, because there was so much of it, were you kind of invested in it, or more like Joe, where you thought everything went on a little bit too long?
No, I liked the basketball. I mean, I thought you were going to ask about the actual ball because it looked like it was like a deflated, like, pig bladder or pig stomach or something. Like, the balls just the balls today are just, you know, a little tighter, a little more bounce to it. But yeah, I mean, I like watching basketball, so I guess if it's in the movie, it's basketball with people talking.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, I enjoyed it. It didn't really hinder my enjoyment of the film.
Yeah, I thought there was a good amount of it, but I enjoyed it as well. So nothing.
And I always like when it, I mean, spoiler alert, they win. I always like when movies end like that, as opposed to this whole movie building up to a point where they lose, and then that's supposed to be a message of some kind. It's like, yeah, that's how real life works. Why don't you show me a movie where everyone wins and is happy and it's great?
Yeah.
So that was my other – that's kind of my thought, I guess. But
I think that's – it's probably because there was so many movies like this. I mean, Rudy, the same director, David Anspaugh, went on to direct Rudy, I think, the next year. Or – no, that's not true.
It was early 90s.
Yeah, yeah. The next – one of the next big movies that he did was Rudy, and that one also has that same kind of thing. And Joe, this is what I was talking to you about before we started recording. I have a confession to make in that I've never seen Rudy in its entirety.
I haven't seen it either.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought that was
gonna. And I'm probably not gonna see it because I could come into this because I wouldn't already hate Hickory High, but I would despise Notre Dame.
Okay. All right.
I think I would watch that movie with too much of a bias.
The old Fighting Irish, Joe, huh? And I'm a big fan.
I mean, if some girl was like, if some girl was like, "Hey, you gotta watch Rudy," and I was, then maybe I'd be like, "Okay, whatever." But other than that, yeah.
Yeah.
Lame. Sean Astin, get out of here.
Well, that's another movie spoiler alert, Rudy. That you know. I don't want to give the ending away. Never mind.
Okay. Anti-spoiler alert.
He gets in the game, and then he dies of AIDS.
That's Brian's song. You're getting the movies wrong. I did want to bring up the deleted scene in Hoosiers, Ben. The deleted scene where at the end, Hackman's in a bar, and he beats up a bunch of ruffians with his cane. I'm also confusing films here. But I thought that'd be a good way to bookend the film.
Oh, I love that so much. I'm really glad that you just said that. That, of course, is a reference to The Quest, the Jean-Claude Van Damme film that we've decided needs to be referenced in every single episode of this podcast in some way.
I'm trying.
Okay, awesome. I didn't get that reference.
Yeah, no, I'm sure nobody got that reference except for, like, diehard people who've listened to every single episode of this show.
And then the book closes and it says Hoosiers on the front.
I'm gonna throw this out.
I remember you guys talking about that one.
Yeah, everybody who listens to this podcast regularly, you might want to just take a couple hours and watch The Quest just so you get that joke for the remainder of this podcast run, because it's gonna be going on for a while.
That's the one you guys said, like, it opened with a book, and then there was telling, like, the book totally wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there was no real narrative.
It's with him in the bar, and he flashes back to the movie, so you watch the flashback, and then it ends with the bar scene again, but then a book closes, so you're like, okay, are you watching the movie where he's flashing back, or is the flashback in the book? It doesn't make any sense.
Because there's no book opening.
There's no book opening. Like, that would make sense. If the book opened and then he was in the bar and then he flashed back and then came back to the bar and then the book closed. That makes sense.
It's a missing parenthesis.
It's a perfect movie right there.
Somewhere. Yeah.
You got a loose circuit.
Yeah.
But, or an open circuit, whatever.
I think one of my favorite parts of this movie was probably the last scene, the last 20 minutes during the championship game, though, because... Ben, I don't know if you keep up with college sports that much, but the Butler Bulldogs, surprisingly, have been in the past two national championship games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of ridiculous. There's 3,000 or something kids that go to that school,
mm-hmm.
and they're a mid-major. They're totally off the radar, and they've gotten to the finals both times. And this movie has been referenced because that last scene was filmed in their gym.
Oh, cool.
And that gym is still, like, I don't know what the name of the team was, the Bears. I don't know what their school name was, but I was kind of hoping it was the Butler Bears or something.
Yeah.
Because they had the BB logo. I don't think they ever showed that.
Yeah, it may have been Butler.
And apparently they were the only team in Indiana with the brothers.
With desegregation in effect.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Every other team was just pure white.
It was kind of shocking to me, honestly, to see that, because you hadn't seen any black people in this entire movie up until that point, and it was just like, yeah. I thought that was a conscious decision that they made in this movie for some reason, like, just to not even deal with the race issue in any way and leave that to movies like, you know, Remember the Titans and, like, films that specifically deal with that as their main through line.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a decision that they made in Hoosiers, just to be like, okay, we're not even going to deal with this, so we're just not even going to try. Like, we've got too much going on with this other stuff that we're going to try to do in this movie. And then that final scene, it's like, it was just kind of a shocking thing. Like, oh, okay, really? Like, you're waiting this long to introduce black people as basketball players? Like, even in the 50s, that's kind of... You're telling me that every other high school that they played in the state of Indiana, like, what is going on there? I don't know. I didn't...
Well, I mean, you're playing your section or your region. So, I can understand that would be predominantly white, let's say. And then a school from, let's say, the city, or a school that is predominantly black would also... Because I guess the tournament has every school in Indiana as an entrant.
Mm-hmm.
So if you win your section or whatever, your region, you go, and then semifinals and whatever. So
yeah, and I'm pretty sure that school was in somewhere in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it might have been. Yeah, it might have been a city school.
Okay. All right. Well,
but yeah, you were totally, like, I almost forgot. I was like, wow, that's like, I totally forgot that like, there's other people in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they didn't address it, though, because that could have just, I mean... Yeah, like you said, Ben, movies that want to address that issue should address it from the beginning, not until the end to say, oh, yeah, by the way, they played a non-white school, too.
Yeah, don't try to make a thing of it when it doesn't need to be made a thing of. But
right. And I don't think it was a thing with me. I mean, obviously, I noticed it just because I was like, you know, I live in a world now where blacks and whites live together for the most part.
Sure.
And when you're watching a movie when there's just white people everywhere, you're like, there's probably a problem here.
Yeah.
But, and in a world where Herman Cain is about to become president, I think
he's far from being president, Joe.
I think we're doing, no way, man.
CEO of Godfather's Pizza.
Ben, you're gonna vote for that guy, right?
I love Godfather's Pizza. I might just vote for him because of that.
Is that guy legitimately the CEO of Godfather's Pizza?
Yeah, he was, yeah. And SNL did a really sweet thing where he's like, government is just like pizza. It's like, it should only be at your door when you order it.
Yeah. Like, it'll cut. Like, pizza will always be there. It'll always come. And I will deliver as your president.
Nice.
He does have some good ideas. I will give him that. But this isn't a politics podcast.
Yeah, good call. All right, well, let's wrap up our discussion about Hoosiers. Any sort of closing thoughts from you guys? Not clothing thoughts, although their shorts were pretty short. But
oh, a little Gallagher 2 going on here.
Yeah. I kind of wish I had seen this movie maybe a long time ago, because like you were saying, Ben, I had already seen The Mighty Ducks, and I kept, like, my mind is kind of hardwired to where I'm like, I kept comparing it to these other movies, so I'm like, oh, I've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think this movie has a kind of a expiration date, if you will.
Yeah. And it probably had a sense of freshness to it back then that just you can't match again today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
With that being said, very entertaining movie. It's Midwest themed. Can't go wrong there. Check it out. It's a Tyler pick.
I would say it's definitely worthy of being called one of the best sports movies of all time, because like we said before, like, the cliches, they all work, and Hackman is, we didn't really talk much about him, but he's really fantastic in this movie.
Yeah.
Hackman
and Hoosiers basically goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
It's Hackman's movie.
Jerry Goldsmith did the score, which we also didn't mention, was nominated for an Oscar for best score or something, and I thought the music was really good too. And Tyler, you did mention that in the beginning, that kind of like synth stuff mixed in, but I thought it worked really well. So yeah, Hoosiers definitely sounds like all of us recommend it. Obviously, hopefully you've listened to it already or watched the movie already if you're listening to this podcast. But anyway,
and don't forget 1980s Parker Posey.
1980s Parker Posey, indeed. All right, so Tyler, you want to rev up the old Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
Sure do. Let me pull that comically large lever that I always pull at this time during the podcast. All right, we're going from the Midwest to the Deep South, Ben, when we watch Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, set in Savannah, Georgia. Written by some guy that wrote a book about it, and directed by who?
Clint Eastwood.
Oh, nice. Maybe a rap guest is in order.
Oh, man. Maybe we'll give Elizabeth Rapp a call, see if she's interested. Cool.
I'll do it, man. That girl's kooky.
Friend of the podcast. Friend of the podcast.
All right. Well, you guys can feel free to subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Leave us a review. That would be great. You can check us out on Facebook. We are on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We have a couple, or actually just one, a new follower this week. It is at PO Studios. So thanks for the heads up there.
Phoenix Online, the guys that made the King's Quest game that I always talk about.
There you go. All right. Good stuff.
Oosh.
So you can feel free to email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. We actually have two emails today. One, my favorite, is from JMZX2, and it says, I've a deal for you. I've a deal for you. Thanks for the email. And
I like his antiquated apostrophe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. Yeah. No.
It was only the subject line, no content.
It was the subject line. Oh, you know, there was no subject, but that was it. It just said, "I've a deal for you."
Hmm.
So yeah, good stuff.
Was there
I think
a link
I might
involved?
Send one in next week that says, "You shan't go wrong with this, Ben."
No, you shall.
Beep, boop, boop, beep. I think in ones and zeros.
Okay, we have another one here. This is, I don't know, if this person is listening
holy
to this.
Holy cow.
Holy cow, I get it. Oh, wow. Yeah,
I'll figure out.
Okay, yeah, I didn't get that at all. Okay, so this is from Holy Cow, so thanks for the email. It says, game idea, name that movie. For this game, you'll need a few scary movies. You can challenge each other or guests by playing the theme song, a character's famous quotes, preferably by recording, or the year it came out in theaters. And she also... Holy cow, wrote into us last week and just corrected a pronunciation point. What I pronounce, I think, is Cayman is apparently pronounced common. So with whatever that was, common samurai raider ninja things.
Suck it, Ben.
There we go. And then she also offers up another choice here. Since you boys are so picky, how about Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? It's a classic black and white from 1939. You can watch the entire movie on YouTube. James Stewart is so hot. So thank you. Holy cow.
Got a Jimmy Stewart fan out there.
Yeah, indeed. All right.
I'm going to put that in the queue. I'm going to put that and we might watch that, which means Jimmy Stewart might be stopping by.
Yep, sounds good.
And I think I might use her game or his game or whatever, Holy Cow's game, come October when we do Scary Movies themed stuff.
Cool, yeah, definitely. All right, so let's go ahead and finish up the character name game. Joe, you want to refresh our memories on that one?
Oh, yeah, sweet. We've got some character name game and some mini games. This is going to be awesome.
Another long All right. segment.
All right, brothers, the name of the person is Collins Toohey.
Collins Toohey. All right. I'm going to say Spy Game.
That is incorrect. I'll let the cat out of the bag and say this movie is related. It's based off Abduction.
Okay.
The one that stars Taylor Lautner. So, Colin Tyler, got any guesses?
Is that Alfred Molina's character in the Selma Hayek vehicle where she has a unibrow?
Oh, Frida?
Is it Frida?
No. Close. Not close, actually.
Wait, it's not close? Okay.
I'll say...
She was topless a lot in that film, Ben. Have you ever seen that?
I've never seen it, no.
Wait, Alfred Molina or Frida?
There's a closet scene that will blow your mind.
Alfred Molina was topless in that movie. Let's think here. I don't know, Joe. You're gonna have to give us a little bit more of a hint.
This movie came out in 2009, critically acclaimed, won some Oscars, I believe.
Okay.
And is also a sports movie.
What? Oh, is it The Blind Side?
I think I gave up too many clues there. It is The Blind Side.
I was going to go Real Steel. That's not a sport.
Collins Toohey, played by Lily Collins, who also stars in Abduction.
Okay, nice.
And she played the daughter of Sandra Bullock and stepbrother of Michael Orr.
Okay, all right, cool. Good one, Joe.
Protect the quarterback.
Keeping the sports movie theme alive. I like it. So, did I hear rumblings of a mini game?
Oh.
Yeah, Ben, I put together a little mini game. As you may have recalled, I wanted to make it onto the podcast when you guys were talking about Hobo with a Shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to file some taxes or something, and it didn't work out. The timing was off.
Mm-hmm.
But I was learning more about this Rucker Hauer guy. I'm not familiar with any of his work.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking over his Rolodex of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And just some of the movies he's been in, the names of these movies are so ridiculous. I thought maybe I had to put together a little game called the Rucker Hauer Explosion Time.
Let's roll that Rucker Hauer Explosion Time theme music.
All right, guys, so here are the rules. I'm going to list off the name of three movies, two of which are legitimate Rucker Hauer films, and one is completely made up or stars some other action star. I didn't look it up.
Okay.
But Rucker Hauer is definitely not in one of those movies. You guys are playing for a used Blaine Gabbert mouth guard, so you know that's a good prize. We did a coin flip backstage, and Tyler, you're going to go first, okay? If you get this wrong... Ben gets a chance to steal it for that point, and the first to three Rucker Hauer points wins the game.
Okay.
Wow. You ready, Tyler? Tyler, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. The first three movies are called Salute of the Jugger, Bleeders, and Under Fire.
And I'm guessing
Which one is not the Rucker Hauer movie?
Not the Rucker Hauer movie?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Salute of the Jugger, Bleeders, or Under Fire.
I'm going to go Bleeders.
Ooh, that is incorrect. Ben, you got a chance to steal here.
I'm going to say Under Fire.
Under Fire is correct. There we go, Ben.
Right.
You, Ben P.
Ben's up 1-0. Okay. All right, round two. Mm-hmm. Ben, this is yours.
Okay.
Scorcher, Prism, or Wedlock?
This is such an awesome game. I'm going to say Prism.
Prism is correct.
Oh, nice. No.
Dominating this. All right, Tyler, you got this one. Fucking this one's a little harder.
You in your sleep, Ben.
You got to get this one.
Okay.
The three movies Rucker Hauer was in, except for one of them. Omega Doom, Tactical Assault, Beyond the Kill.
Crap.
Yo, this
is all sound like awesome movies.
This is a brilliant game, by the way.
Can you name them again, please?
Okay. Omega Doom, Tactical Assault, and Beyond the Kill.
Omega Doom, Tactical Assault. I'm going to say Beyond the third one.
Beyond the Kill is correct.
Yes.
Nice.
Tyler.
Oh.
Clinging to life. Tyler's
Catherine Hahn.
Down 2-1. Ben goes in the fourth round. Ugh. Ben, your three movies are...
Amity.
Deathline, My Morning Tea, and Turkish Delight.
Oh, no.
Deathline, My Morning Tea, and Turkish Delight. Turkish Delight being the whimsical jelly dessert from Turkey.
I'm gonna say Deathline.
Deathline is incorrect. I'm sorry. Tyler, you got a chance to steal. My Morning Tea or Turkish Delight?
I had a feeling. I think it's Turkish Delight.
That is actually Turkish Delight is actually Rucker Hauer's debut film.
Wow. 1978. Yeah, I was going to go with My Morning Tea, but it sounded like you threw in Turkish Delight to mess with us.
Oh, I yeah, these are structured in a way to throw you off.
No points.
All right, whose turn is
it's
it?
It's Tyler's.
It'll be mine.
All right, Tyler. You got control of the board.
Time to return to my glory.
The three movies are Dark Lord 2, Flesh and Blood, and Mentor.
I don't think Rucker Hauer has ever appeared in a sequel. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. Dark Lord 2, Flesh Lord?
What? Flesh and Blood.
Flesh and Blood.
Flesh and Blood, okay. And Mentor. Ugh. Not to be confused with Minotaur, which is what he did a year before Mentor.
Okay. So he wasn't Mentor.
Oh, oops.
So I'm gonna go.
Sorry, Ben.
I'm gonna go Dark Lord 2 because I don't think Hauer was ever in a sequel.
Oh, wow, nice call, Tyler. It is Dark Lord 2. I totally made that movie up.
Cool.
All right, Ben. It's tied at 2. You got control.
Ben, in my way of getting Joe to double talk.
This is the last round. I didn't create any more after this, so I'm gonna win.
Okay.
Oh, God.
All right, Ben, the three movies are The Hunt for Eagle 1, Escape from Sobibor, or Terror in the Indies.
Again, they all sound like awesome films. Why aren't we watching these movies?
Terror in the Indies, final answer.
That is correct, Ben. You would... Blaine Gabbert mouthguard.
Nice.
You win 3-2, sir. Good job.
Man, good game though.
Tastes like Kentucky.
That third one was almost a trick because he was in one called Terror in the Isles, and I just changed it to Indies.
Ooh, man.
Weird.
But Escape from Sobibor, definitely real.
It sounded too crazy to be made up. So.
That
has been Rucker Hauer explosion time. Tyler,
I expect another edition of that next time you're on, Joe.
That's close to all. No, there's still a lot more movies, actually.
Awesome.
You did about 50.
Cool. All right, well, let's go around the circle, wrap this sucker up, and tell people where people can track down our work on the internet this week. Joe Leninger, we'll start with you.
You can find me at the Playing Field blog, theplayingfieldblog.com, and camelclutchblog.com, writing about wrestling and sometimes the NFL.
Cool.
And that's about it, Ben. I'm done with blogging, pretty much.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Tyler, let's go to you.
Yeah, I'm kind of in exile right now as well, but Joe and I will be having a special guest on to talk about tomorrow's release, or Tuesday's release, of Inside Out, starring Hunter Hearst Helmsley. So that'll be an After Midnight. So if you want to stay tuned this week, that might be popping out in stores soon.
In the iTunes store for free.
Go to your Redbox or Walmart and get that immediately then.
Yeah. It's going to be on instant watch, we guarantee it.
Inside Out, Michael Rapaport.
Okay.
And Parker Posey, surprisingly.
Parker Posey getting all the love on this podcast.
Man, yeah. I'm a huge Poser fan.
I mean, she's no Amber Heard, but whatever.
All right, well, you guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing sporadically at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast, and you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. Music for this episode comes courtesy of Jerry Goldsmith's Hoosiers soundtrack. So we will watching Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, the Clint Eastwood films, is available on Netflix Watch instantly. So feel free to check that out. Come back and listen to us discuss that next week. Shoot us an email. Let us know what you think. Leave us a voicemail if that's your preferred method. And thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks also to Joe Leninger for stopping by and hanging out with us tonight.
Boosh.
Thanks, yeah. Joe.
All right. Everybody have a good week. We'll catch you later on.